Hey everyone, welcome to the Front Church Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Albino. Now in a moment, I'll be joined by my colleague Mike Neff, and we got a really good show for you guys today. The Pro Invitational Series came to a close over the weekend, so Neff reflects back on some of his memories at North Wilkesboro. Meanwhile, Chicagoland Speedway, Richmond Raceway, and Sonoma Raceway all lost dates on the Cup schedule this year, with the possibility of Chicago being gone for good. Finally, Rick Ware joins the podcast to discuss moving into a new race shop during the pandemic, how his team is affected sponsorship-wise going forward, and how this hectic schedule over the next month or so affects his race team. I'll preface this by saying we recorded this interview last Thursday, May 7th, prior to the Darlington entry list coming out, which has Ware listed as the owner of the 27 car, formerly of Premium Motorsports, as Ware has purchase agreement in place to buy Premium and is in control of the charter. But before we get started, make sure to go over to manscaped.com and use the code FRIENDSTRETCH for 20% off and free shipping. Again, 20% off and free shipping. And also make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the Front Stretch Podcast on Apple Podcasts, as those ratings help us out tremendously. You can also catch us on Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, and really wherever podcasts can be found. It's great to finally get the podcast on all these other networks. Now let's talk some racing with Neff. All right, Neff, this might be the last time that we're talking about the virtual world, at least hopefully for a while. Denny Hamlin bookends the seven-race Pro Invitational Series with wins, obviously winning the first race at Homestead in dramatic fashion this weekend, winning at North Wilkesboro over the weekend. I really enjoyed this event, and you know, I can't say that for all the races. Like Homestead, the first one was kind of a shit show, for lack of a better word. And other ones along the way, Bristol for sure. So North Wilkesboro, though, you know, return kind of from the dead, if you want to be honest, because that track's kind of been out extinct for the past 25 years. I enjoyed it as a whole.
It was a cool show. I have a special love for North Wilkesboro, having helped out with the gang that brought the races back up there, and I was there for all of the races when they revitalized it, and really want to see it do something. And it has been a sticking point with me and Mr. Smith, because Bruton promised that once he owned 51%, we'd get racing back, and that has not happened. It's just something needs to happen, I guess, because you have two racetracks still in existence that were on the very first NASCAR schedule, Martinsville and North Wilkesboro. And the fact that they're letting it deteriorate back into the earth is just so disheartening when it, yeah, sure, it would take some money to fix it up, but Daytona just spent $400 million on their injectors, and Talladega spent $100 and some million on their upgrades, and Phoenix spent 40 something million, you know. Mm-hmm. So there's money there. Let's go ahead, even if it's only for Xfinity and trucks, which for starters, we do that. We see what the crowds are like, and we go from there. But as far as the virtual side, I thought it was great. Smart move by Denny to put his remotes in a bag and throw them on top of a shelf that even he couldn't reach. So he had to get a ladder out after he got done racing to go get his remotes to make sure his kid didn't turn it off on him. And I thought the racing was okay. It filled a void for us. It was nice to have something to watch and cheer on about. I would like to see if they decide to run with this, and I hope they will, to open up the setups a little bit. I think the fixed setup just ended up being too much of a parade, and I think you would have had some variety and some differences of lines and attack method if you had some different setups. But hey, Timmy Hill is your Pro Invitational champion since William Byron no-showed on the last race of the event.
For sure, as did all of Hendrick Motorsports, Chip Ganassi Racing, and Team Penske. But you brought up how, you know, North Wilkesboro, the virtual race, brought back memories for you. Definitely wanted to get your take on some of the memories, some of your best ones. But, you know, you mentioned that it's going to take money to prepare the track, and it's going to take a lot of money. You know, I've never personally been to North Wilkesboro, but from pictures I've seen, articles I've read recently, let's face it, it's kind of a dump. from pictures and, like I said, articles. So it's almost a thing where you'd have to tear down and then literally build back up. And, you know, you see pictures of the garage just falling down, like that.
Yeah, I mean, basically what you'd have, there's aluminum bleachers turn one through three quarters of the backstretch that they've got a couple bad spots, but those could probably be salvaged.
And that's it.
your front stretch grandstand is cement, so you throw some new seats on that if you want, and you'd be good. I would like to see them put whole new grandstands in there. But as far as press box, suites, and bathrooms and all that stuff, you got to level all of it. I mean, there's nothing salvageable of any of that. But the greatest thing about it is the racing surface is still good.
Right.
That racing surface, you could go tomorrow and have a race there on the track. The key would be the other stuff. One cool thing they have, and again, back when they resurrected it back in 2010, the Victory Lane at North Wilkesboro was on top of the media center in the infield. Now, mind you, when I say media center North Wilkesboro, it had seating for like six people, and it wasn't very big. But you had this hydraulic lift, and a car would pull in, stop on it, and they would hydraulically lift it up and then roll it on top of the media center. And the guys they fired the thing up, blew a couple fittings off of some hoses, they replaced them, and the thing worked. So literally after it had been sitting there from 96 until 2010, they put fresh fluid in it, a couple fittings, and they were good to go. So I think you could probably still have that as the one of the cool things to throw back on it. Again, you're going to make it an Xfinity or level track, you're going to probably spend $40 or $50 million. You want to make it a Cup track, you're going to spend $120
million. Right.
But you're resurrecting history. And so much of what we're talking about now of getting back to the roots of the sport, there's no deeper root than the track that was on the very first schedule. And out of Wilkes County, where moonshine running was king when NASCAR started. I mean, it just, the place is dripping with history and importance. And I would love to see something coming. I'm not optimistic. I'm a realist. I know the odds are it ain't going to happen. But man alive, there was so much buzz about it this weekend. And I don't know. I hope it gets Marcus inspired.
Yeah, it was cool. All the little, like, throwback. It felt like a throwback weekend, like a Darlington. You had some throwback paint schemes, like Dale Jr. had one. I know Corey LaJoy also had a throwback paint scheme. The walls, the red and white, also similar to Darlington, like they were back in the day at North Wilkesboro. It said, like, it had like the
wind with all the signs,
yeah.
First Union, Holly Farms, all that.
Like painted on the wall. It said the NASCAR Cup Series, but it was in the font of the Winston Cup Series, which I thought was really cool as well. So it was just a really cool throwback weekend. I like you would like to have North Wilkesboro back. You know, personally, I've never watched. I've seen highlights and, you know, races. I've never seen a live race there. And, you know, in terms of on TV, being in there in person, in general. Because the last race there was 1996 for the Cup Series.
Yep.
So, I mean, then I was 1 year old. So, so Neff, I thought it brought back some memories. I'm sure it did for you, too. You also hit on the iRacing aspect. And the past 2 months, I mean, look, NASCAR, iRacing, Fox, together, collectively, they all filled a void. Just think if we didn't have this, and I know we haven't bashed it, but and we're not the biggest fans of iRacing or e-racing or whatever, esports, but it did fill a small void, I think, that we all had, because if we would have gone over 2 months with no racing at all, after just coming off an off season, that would have been a tough pill to swallow. So at least we had this for the past 2 months, and a lot of people benefited from it too, I think.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, it filled a need for competition. And I've said it all along, it's a video game. It's still competition.
Yeah.
And you have guys that have talent, and talent rises to the top, and there's emotion. Excuse me. And, I mean, we saw that with multiple guys that I think we're going to have to see how it plays out when we get back to real racetracks, if a rivalry is really there or not. I feel like some of these guys are going to exact a little revenge when we start running these other tracks. But it just gave us something to cheer for, but it also opened up a little bit of the personalities of these guys. Mm-hmm. Because, let's face it, the guard went down for this. It wasn't the buttoned-up, super corporate cup weekend that we're used to. And so you got guys joking around and making fun of each other and talking crap. And I thought that was really... I thought that was the coolest part that we got out of this whole thing.
Yeah, and honestly, like, you know, Fox gets a lot of hate for their broadcasts. I mean, let's be honest. Compared to NBC especially. But I think they've handled this the past 7 weeks really well. Especially having Clint Bowyer there, who's entertaining as all hell. Him with a hot mic for an hour and a half is great. I could have that on my TV every night, you know, especially once a week. So clearly this was, I would imagine, a tryout for him, you know, once he does hang up the helmet full time. I think other drivers benefited too. Timmy Hill, like you mentioned, he won the Invitational Championship. You know, not that there was really such a thing, but he was first in points. Right. He had 6 top 3 finishes, second over the weekend. You can't really translate this to the real world. You know, I think Timmy's a really good driver.
Honestly, you can. I mean, they showed that they're rolling their car in the out of the trailer for the next 6 or 8 races.
Yeah.
So they're going to have a sponsor that got on for iRacing. Right. So it did translate to the real world.
In a way. But in terms of, I mean, how much, and I get that, you know, MBM Motorsports, let's face it. And I talked to Carl Long about this, and he said that it's done wonders for their team. And this was 4 or 5 races in, so 2 or 3 weeks ago. And he says that, you know, having the publicity of the 66 car on TV has definitely helped them. So, yeah, to a degree, I agree with you. But let's face it, MBM's not going to go from a 35th place team to a 25th place team, or even a 20th place team overnight. So, you know, this definitely...
Not overnight, but if they get an infusion of cash that runs through this whole season, I could see them running 25th by the end of the season.
It's hard for me to see. I would like it. Don't get me wrong. I'd really like it. It'd be a real cool underdog story. But Timmy Hill's an underdog too. I mean, let's face it. He runs his own truck team.
Oh, yeah.
And I think he's benefited wonders. And if it does come to fruition in the real world, which I really hope it does for him, because he's a great guy too, then it does. And this would pay dividends these past 7 races. But yeah, I think overall, great experience and a good trial run for iRacing. And really, I would imagine they're the real winners in this, because you probably got a lot of people. You probably got a lot of subscriptions off of this, right?
Subscriptions, and I don't know how much it costs to get North Wilkesboro, but I promise you, they got a big into their bottom line yesterday when that rolled out.
Yeah, and let's face it, Steve Myers and Dale Jr.
were early in.
Yes.
Yeah, it was a huge influx of cash yesterday.
Yeah, and Steve Myers and Dale, you know, one of the founders of iRacing, and Dale Jr. were huge proponents of getting this racing at North Wilkesboro. So I like the weekend racing. You know, our opinions on iRacing and esports aside, I thought it was good for the sport and filled a void. But Neff, before we go any further, support for the Front Stretch Podcast is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-belt grooming. Manscaped offers precision engineered tools for those family jewels. Enough, last week you gave us a little story, a little insight on one of your manscaping injuries. Well, I want you to elaborate a little, but not too much.
Easy now. It was kind of a big story, if I don't mind saying. We joked a little about it last week. There's a lot of blood flow to the nether regions to take care of the family jewels, and a small nick can lead to a large mess, so make sure if you're manscaping, you're not standing on a white rug in your bathroom, because that can leave stains that don't come out. But as a heads up, if you do have some sort of a nick or damage while manscaping, make sure you let it bleed itself out and seal itself up. Because if you get dressed without making sure you're done bleeding, let's just say getting undressed will open some old wounds, and you don't want to do that.
Ah, yeah, no bueno. Doesn't sound good at all, but fortunately enough, I can help you. That's why Manscaped has redesigned the electric trimmer. the Manscaped engineering team spent 18 months, that means a year and a half, perfecting the greatest ball hair trimmer ever created, and just released the new and improved Lawnmower 3.0. Their third generation trimmer features a cutting edge ceramic blade to prevent manscaping accidents. Millions of balls are about to be nick free thanks to Manscaped's advanced skin safe technology. Manscaping accidents are finally in the rearview mirror.
Now, when we talk about it being a premium shaver, we mean a premium shaver. One of the first things that they worked on was the battery. The battery life on the Manscaped Lawnmower 3.0 is 90 minutes. That means not only can you do a thorough and complete job while you do your manscaping, if you're going on a long weekend, take it with you. Every night, do a little touch-up. Make sure the ladies see your junk at its finest. One of the coolest features of the Lawnmower 3.0 is the LED light, which illuminates the grooming area and lets you have a better view for a closer, more precise trim. They've also upgraded their motor to the 7,000 RPM motor with a quiet stroke technology, so you have high speed, which allows for clean, crisp cuts while you're doing your manscaping. And don't forget about the charging stand. Show your mower off loud and proud, because this intelligently designed stand is a convenient charging dock, and it is powered by a USB.
So if you're listening to us right now, I want you to experience this firsthand for yourself and trim that junk of yours. Get 20% off and free shipping with code FRONTSTRETCH at manscaped.com. Again, get 20% off and free shipping with the code FRONTSTRETCH at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. And use the code FRONTSTRETCH.
Your balls will thank you.
They absolutely will. Now, Neff, we are going racing this weekend in the real world.
Woo!
I'm pumped. Clearly you are as well. Your home, your current state where you live, your residence, South Carolina, we're going to Darlington Raceway. I'm amped up. I'm ready to go. We talked about the void that iRacing's kind of filled over the past 2 months or so, but it's nothing like the real thing. And at all places, we're going to Darlington, historic place. I'm ready. I'm so ready.
I am too. The one thing I'm curious about, I haven't heard if Cherry has found a trophy yet. Mm. They were interviewing him on local TV last week, and he's like, we hadn't even thought about what we're doing for a trophy yet. So I'm hoping they've come up with something to give to the winner of Victory Lane. I'm with you. I'm so excited about it. You know, again, iRacing was fun, but we're not going to have people driving through people. We're not going to have people hanging on fences. We're not going to have resets. This is all real racing with real pit stops, real fuel strategy, and it's daytime racing in Darlington. I'm so pumped about that, too. It's going to be great to watch. It's going to be a weird experience not seeing fans in the stands, and it's going to be a weird experience not being there when it's so close to home, but we got to start somewhere. Baby steps will get us there, and at least at this point, we're still planning on running a full season, which is a beautiful thing. I applaud NASCAR for getting out in front of this and trying to do everything they can to abide by all the CDC guidelines. There's a couple things that are a little hinky. I'm not totally understanding how you celebrate a victory without high fives, but I'm sure we'll figure something out.
Yeah, and you know, when it comes to this, the pandemic that we've been living in, it kind of seems, I want to use kind of, you know, be careful my words here, but it kind of seems like NASCAR's been the leader of all sports leagues. They were the last one to kind of wait off. So you could say there the NBA was the leader in terms of shutting down. But now you look at trying to restart, and all these sports leagues are having a hell of a time trying to restart. Because let's face it, there's real life repercussions. We've talked about this many times, risk versus reward. Because there's a lot of risk NASCAR restarting right now, while, you know, still tons of states are shut down. It looks like the MLB won't start up till July, which is obviously 2 months away. NBA, who knows? So this is a big step for NASCAR. I would imagine the ratings are going to be very high on Sunday, which is great. And it's just a kind of a trickle effect, as you have seven national races between the Trucks, Xfinity, and Cup in 11 days. At the Cup level, 1,600 miles in 11 days. You obviously got the Coke 600 in there. So a lot of racing. And really, even if you go back to the, you know, 1960s, 70s, when they were running 50, 60 races a year, I don't know they've ever had anything like this.
The post I saw about it yesterday said the one time that they ran four races in 11 days Richard Petty won all four of them. So that gives you an idea when that was. Back, I want to say it was actually 71, if I'm not mistaken. But, yeah, it's been very rare to run this much on top of each other, and it's not something we're going to do normally. But, again, knocking on wood, there's things that will be learned out of this, and mm-hmm. there's a lot of different angles and different aspects. But one of the things we're trying, intentionally or unintentionally, is midweek races. And there's been a lot of push from people like me that would love to see some Wednesday night races that go on at some smaller venues. It might be a little more of a niche race than a full-blown cup race. And if these Wednesday night shows are successful, I think that's gonna open up a door to allow us to do a few different things. Condense the schedule down. Everybody's been complaining that it runs too long, so that would narrow the schedule down. You'd end up having some shorter races, I'm sure, which everybody complains that the races are too long, besides me, because I still think every race should be 500 miles. But it'll give people a chance to see, you know, what kind of legs these midweek races have. And I truly hope that they really catch on, because it would be amazing to see us run on a Wednesday night at Irwindale or, you know, South Boston or Stafford or something like that in the middle of the week, and just have a, you know, a 300 miler where we show up, we qualify, and we race in one day.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy to think that, you know, we've only ran four races this year. Obviously, they were in four consecutive weeks between February and March. We're going to have four in 11 days now. Look, this is going to be grueling for the teams, even though, you know, they're only going to their backyard in Charlotte and Darlington, which is about 2 hours away, maybe a little longer for some teams, maybe a little shorter for others. It's still going to be grueling because there's going to be very short turnaround time, at least for the first five races. You know, once we get past the 27th in Charlotte, the second Charlotte race, when there's probably going to be a race that weekend in maybe Bristol or you know, a surrounding area. So, this is good. I'm glad racing's back. Not officially back yet, but by the weekend it will be. And I'm interested, like you, I'm interested in seeing how this goes in terms of one-day schedules, condensing the schedules. You know, NASCAR did announce on Monday that they're going to, at least for the Xfinity and truck fields, open it up to 40 per series. I think that's a good step, especially for the Xfinity series. You have, and for Cup too. Obviously their fields are at 40 already, but you think of the Xfinity series, and I talked to like Sanford Racing, did a feature on them in the middle of March. And I mean, look, if there's been 36 cars at all four races this year, which is the number that the Xfinity series has this year, down from 38 last year and down from 42 years ago per race. So that's a team where if they're the 37th car, they have no owner points, they miss Daytona, they're out. So I think it's good trying to get all the teams in. And I think that's also why you see teams like Tommy Baldwin Racing, who decided to show up after really not racing since 2017. I know they attempted the 2019 Daytona 500, missed it with Ryan Truex. But they got Josh Blicky in the car this weekend. And then also BJ McLeod Motorsports making their Cup debut this weekend. I'll be talking to both team owners this week and having articles for you on Front Stretch. But this could be good for everyone involved.
Absolutely. I agree with you that expanding out these fields, because they're not having qualifying, and giving these teams a chance to say, hey, look, we want you to be a part of this, so we're going to expand this out and give everybody a shot that's interested in being involved in it. I think that's a definite positive to, again, we got to keep building the sport. And we've talked about it ad nauseum here for the last few weeks. We'll be lucky to have all the teams survive this year. And in order for us to be able to continue to grow the sport, we have to open up possibilities for other teams to show up. And this is a way for it to happen. So glad they've gone about it that way. And also going to be interesting to experience this from the media side. I know we tend to talk a little bit about ourselves in this media spotlight, but how this is going to be handled. And you know, post-race is going to be a Zoom teleconference, and the TV guys are calling the race from Charlotte. There's only going to be one reporter on site. Regan Smith is going to be running up and down like crazy on pit lane, trying to cover all that. It's going to be a unique experience, to say the least. And again, how do we get to these guys for this Zoom conference? Are they going to be riding in their car headed back to Charlotte? They're going to be on their helicopter. You know, it'll be interesting how this all plays out and how it develops. We're going to have four people on site covering it from the media core. And then again, photography wise, you're going to have two photographers from Getty Images, and one other photographer is being chosen by the pool. So it's going to be a very interesting experience, a very interesting weekend. But the bottom line is we get cars going around in anger, and I cannot wait to see it.
Yeah, that's the best part. At least, I mean, look, NASCAR's got to do what they got to do. They're going to try and limit, exposure for everyone. So if, you know, as part as the media, obviously I want to be at the track. We all want to be at the track. It doesn't matter what outlet you're at. And it's history. I mean, it's, you know, the UFC, had a match or had a bout this weekend in Jacksonville. But that was on pay-per-view for the most part. This is the first real sports action in North America that's been on television since the pandemic began in early to mid-March. So, look, NASCAR's doing all they can, but they've got to limit people. And honestly, like, I don't know. I mean, personally, I've never been to Darlington. You have, Neff. So I think it's going to vary from four to different throughout the the races, but Darlington seems to have a smaller press box. So, I mean, it is what it is. We're all living in it, and it's equity. So we can only hope that.
Yeah. The one other thing I thought might be fun this weekend, and again, logistically and how they're going to do it, I doubt it would happen. But if you're really looking to socially distance these teams, the backstretch pit road is still there. So in theory, you could pit cars on the backstretch, and that would give you another 15 or 18 spots to divide everybody out and spread them out so that you're not on top of each other. And you talk about a throwback. It's been, golly, I moved to Charlotte in 94, and Darlington was the first race that I went to, and they were still pitting on a backstretch at that point in time. So I want to say it was 96 or 97 that they flipped the track and they had everybody pit on the one side. So it would be a similar to the North Wilkesboro going back to the 90s. It would go back to the 90s if we had a pit on the backstretch. But, man, that would be kind of fun to watch.
Yeah, it's with there being no practice or anything like that, I feel like that would be a tough, pass. But regardless, that does bring up an option. I know the Xfinity teams, work there sometimes when they're at the track. I think they qualify their cars from the backstretch, if I'm not mistaken. I may be mistaken. But regardless, Neff, I'm excited. And you mentioned earlier the team members. So there's supposedly not supposed to be any high fives, no really interaction between team members. That's going to make the winner. I'm so curious to see who wins this race and how they react and how they celebrate, because you really
must say, they're going to be in victory lane by themselves.
Yeah, you can't celebrate. So that's something we're not accustomed to seeing. I don't know. It's going to be weird, but let's face it. Come Sunday, there's going to be a winner, and there's going to be a guy that's really happy, and then team members who can't be around. I don't know. It's interesting because these guys are going to be around each other all day, beating and banging on the cars should they get in accidents, especially at Darlington, changing tires, fueling. I don't know. It's just interesting.
It's weird.
Yeah.
Definitely weird.
But look, we're getting cars back on the track. That's all that matters.
That's all that matters.
And, as the season resumes, I mean, yes, we had a two-month hiatus, but I want to kind of refresh everyone's memory of what happened to the first four races. Obviously, Denny Hamlin won Daytona. Joey Logano won two of the first four races, being at Vegas and most recently at Phoenix. Alex Bowman.
Ryan Newman almost died.
Yep. Alex Bowman had dominated at Fontana. There's been a lot of stuff. It's been a good year so far in terms of on-track product, I think. Granted, there's only been four races. There's a lot of storylines going into this race that are, kind of being overlooked because it is the first four back. But Chevy remaining the front runners. Can Toyota turn ship around? Because right now their highest person in points is 11th. Like I mentioned, Logano winning two of four races. What storyline are you kind of most intrigued by going into the weekend? And maybe as the season resumes, kind of, you know, kicks off and continues.
I'm curious to see, as you said, is Chevy going to stay up front? What's Hendrick going to continue to look like? We talk about carryover and developments from the iRacing side leading back to real racing. William Byron dominated in the iRacing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What has that done to his confidence with a real race car? What is that going to do to Hendrick Motorsports with real race cars? And just in general with these, the rust. I mean, Matt Kenseth is getting in a car, and the first lap at speed is going to be lap one of the race. That's crazy if you think about it, but unfortunately that's the way it is. So, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, with the simulations and everything else that goes on, these cars hit the track ready to roll. I mean, they're 95% of where they need to be when they roll off the truck. So I'm not worried that somebody's going to go into turn one and all four tires are going to fall off the car and the thing's going to flip. But at the same time, you're still not sure. And going into turn one at Darlington is one of the scariest experiences on the circuit. And doing that for your first hot lap in however many weeks, 9 weeks, it's going to give you a little butt pucker going on when it happens. And again, that's why these guys are the best at what they do. It reminds me, years ago, I was at Indy and was in the restroom, ironically, in the media center, and Ty Dillon came in, and they had him in there for an interview. And he had been overrunning at Raceway Park in a truck. And then he came over to run a cup car at the big track. And his first lap, he goes into the first corner at, like, 2:10. And I'm like, how do you – I can't wrap my arms around how you can be running at Raceway Park going into turn one at 90. Come over here, strap in, and your very first time you go in a corner, you're as flat out as you're going to get. That difference in speed is crazy. But these guys are wired that way that they can turn it on and off at the drop of a hat, and we're going to find out who's the best of the best when we first get down there. But again, 400-mile race, we're going to have some time to figure out who the real winner is.
For sure. Yeah, there's a lot of storylines. You brought up the Kenseth situation. I think that's one of the top storylines. You have, in my opinion, one of the top 15, 20 drivers probably of all time, strapping into a car that he's never been in, with a team he's never been with. Hasn't raced in a year and a half, hasn't been full-time in almost 3 years. That's going to be fun to watch. And like you said, first lap in a car he's never, in a package anyways, he's never raced in, at Darlington. he's done some interviews over the past week kind of gearing up for this race, and I know he's on the Dale Jr. Download this week. I'll listen to that later today probably, but he was on Michael Waltrip's podcast. He's done some podcasts and interviews with other outlets. He seems excited. He says he can't remember the last time he was this excited to go to a track, go racing. And he's playoff eligible, so there's something to race for sure, for the team, for Kenseth, etc. So that's going to be a storyline, but it's just going to develop, and this season's going to get going, and it's not going to stop.
Hopefully not.
Yeah, hopefully not, as long as, everyone stays safe and there's no big government shutdowns or anything like that from what just happened 2 months ago. But, Neff, there was some pretty big news, I would say. We found out late last week that Sonoma Raceway, Chicagoland Speedway, and Richmond Raceway are the events that are being replaced with these two dates at Darlington and the one next week at Charlotte. It was almost a foregone conclusion. We've talked about that being Sonoma, that was eliminated, whether it be the governor out there saying there's going to be no really mass gatherings until middle of 2021, or that it's the furthest track to travel to on the NASCAR circuit. But I'm curious about the Chicago one. There's been a lot of news to come out over the past 48, 72 hours about Chicagoland Speedway. And really, a track that maybe 10, 5, maybe even 5 years ago wasn't the best track to compete at on track. But really, over the past couple of years, the on-track action has been really good. Obviously, the Kyle Larson, Kyle Busch finish in 2018, and that race as a whole was really good.
Yeah, this I was a little surprised, but not a lot. Again, Illinois' governor is another one that's being super conservative about opening back up, and it kind of appeared early on that getting that race in was going to be a challenge. And so I can kind of see where that was one that kind of made sense to drop off. And obviously, as you said, Sonoma was going to be off because they're just not even talking about the possibility, really. The one that really caught me off guard was Richmond.
Yeah.
I mean, it's close to Charlotte. It's an easy drive. It's a short track. That one to me was one that was kind of mind-boggling because I was guessing the third one was going to be New Hampshire or Kansas.
Same.
Because those, you know, again, are the long drives to get to, and I would have hated to have seen New Hampshire lose one because I think they deserve to keep it, but that just seemed like one of the logical choices. But for them to call it out as Richmond is an interesting one. On the Chicagoland front, I'm worried about them. Having lived in Chicago for a while, I loved having that track there, and the thought that it might go away at some point in time would stink. But they've already lost one date. Their attendance has been mediocre at best, and you now have them losing a date. So the battle to get back next year is going to be big. And if NASCAR fans in Northern Illinois want to hang on to their racetrack, they better show up in droves in 2021.
Well, and that's the thing, too, is we've seen all these reports over the past couple of days of Chicagoland Speedway being gone. I don't want to get too much into it because there's so much going on there. And then you have the city of Joliet come out with some statements. So, I don't know. It looks like NASCAR is trying to sell part of Chicagoland Speedway's
like auxiliary parking.
Yeah.
They have
a whole bunch of
lots. You know, if you've ever been to Charlotte for a race, there's lots that go way out on Bruton Smith Boulevard away from the track and some that head down towards Harrisburg that really don't get utilized unless the place is packed out. And it's the same thing with Chicagoland. You know, when they first opened up, they were getting 80,000 people. They're not getting 80,000 anymore. So they have some land in this. It's the track is in an industrial complex. And there were actually some companies that had to move warehouses in order for the parking lots to be built for the track. Well, now they have parking lot space that's not being utilized. So the look at selling that off, A, raises some money for the track, and B, gives these companies that are in need of some more warehouse space places to build it. The scary thing was when the plot list initially came out for the meeting, it shows these rectangles right on top of the track. And that was what everybody freaked out about. But the county commission has come out and said, what we're talking about for the sale is not involving the track at all. And so taking them at their word, I think we got at least another year or two before we worry about losing that track.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully, because there's been reports, obviously, in the past, too, that NASCAR's looking to do not a road course, but a street course. Could Chicago be one? Maybe.
I
mean, yeah, you're also, Auto Club's also in this situation too. I mean, that's been reported that, you know, could be on the outs too. And then you got obviously Long Beach down there, in Southern California. So who knows? It's something that, you know, really developed over the past 2, 3, 4 days, and it's only going to continue to develop. Bum for Chicago because, as I mentioned, that has been, I mean, that 2018 race overall from start to finish, you had Eric Almirola.
Yeah.
I mean, before even Almirola, Clint Bowyer, he was dominating, had three speeding penalties, went 2 or 3 laps down, came back to finish fifth. Eric Almirola then dominated, looked to be like he led more laps that day than he had in like 5 seasons combined or something like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was a cool story. And then he had a couple speeding penalties or loose wheels or some shenanigans. And then you had, obviously, the finish with Kyle Busch, Kyle Larson. The post. Yeah. Dale Jr.'s first call as a broadcaster. It was just overall a great race. So, I mean, I'd be bummed for them. The Richmond thing, like you mentioned, I'm surprised about that, too. Because, one, that's an easy race you can make up. Like you said, it's only, I don't know, 6 hours or so from Charlotte, if that.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's one I'm surprised about. It is a short track. Of the three short tracks, you know, between Richmond, Bristol, Martinsville, I mean, I'm not all for Richmond losing a date, but of those three tracks, I would be. Because I don't want to lose a date at Martinsville nor Bristol. So, I mean, if you look at it that way, I guess it's a positive. But, yeah, kind of bummed for Richmond, too, because that's a place I've spent a lot of time at. It's fun to go to, fun little town. But, hey, they had to get rid of races somewhere, and I think they're trying to make it not even, but, you know, as less, you know, as minimal damage as possible to some of these tracked markets, too. As you said, I'm happy New Hampshire didn't lose a date. I thought they were going to. But, hey, they didn't. So they'll be racing there sometime this year, hopefully. But Neff, anything else on this, or you got any more topics?
I don't think so. I think we're ready to go on and get a little discussion in with our friend Rick Ware. But don't forget, you get 20% off free shipping with the code FRONTSTRETCH at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Make sure you use the code FRONTSTRETCH when you make your order.
Absolutely. But now if we do got to get to predictions quickly. So not sure what we're going to do.
Oh, I forgot about predictions.
Yeah, not sure what we're going to do with the podcast yet. I think we're going to do it every Thursday. So that means we would have a Cup Xfinity and then a Cup race before our next podcast. And we'll have a lot to review then when we record next Thursday morning. So, you know, this you might as well pick a name out of a hat, but.
Yeah, it's really dark, preferably without feathers.
But I expect, you know, people to typically run well at Darlington to run well at Darlington. So I guess I'll kick it off. You know, Toyota struggled to kick off the season. But I think Denny Hamlin gets his second win of the year. You know, there's other guys that run well at Darlington. Obviously, you know, Kyle Busch runs well there. Eric Jones won the last race there. Hell, even Matt Kenseth, that's one of his, you know, not best tracks, but he's decent there. But I'm going to go Denny Hamlin. I think he turns his ship around it for Toyota. Who you got?
Don't get too far out on that limb there, brother. I am going to go with Kevin Harvick. I think, the Fords are looking decent, and SHR has been struggling a little bit. And I think this coming out of this break, it'll be a good thing for them. For Harvard to get back in form and knock one out here. Dark horse, I'm going to go Matt DiBenedetto. I think DiBenedetto is going to be up and in the running in this thing and would not be surprised to see him sneak off and grab a win out of this team.
Yeah, that's a good dark horse. Hey, Matty D's, he's finished second at Vegas. He's got two top tens in four races, sitting ninth in points right now. Gotten off to a good start this year with the Wood Brothers. Now that he's using good equipment last year, decent equipment, but now he's in really good quality equipment, essentially being a fourth Penske car. Neff, the Xfinity race is next Tuesday night. The Xfinity series got off to a really good start this year, I think. Obviously, Joe Gibbs Racing, there's a lot of talk about their three youngsters, per se, and they've performed. Harrison Burton and Brandon Jones both have wins. Obviously, Noah Gragson won at Daytona. And Chase Briscoe, you know, arguably the championship favorite at Stewart Haas Racing, won at Vegas, kind of in dominating fashion. So, who you got winning this one? Also, you might as well pick a name out of a hat.
I'm going to go with my man Briscoe. Briscoe's got to get busy. He's going to win those six races that he says he's going to win this year. And he ran really well last year at Darlington. I mean, he had a cool paint scheme. He was just feeling it and was in contention till the end. So I think he's my dude. We're going to go with Briscoe for the win.
While you go with Briscoe, I'm going to go with back-to-back for Brandon Jones. You know, a lot of people have... Let's be honest, who've criticized Brandon over really his five-year career in the Xfinity Series, whether it be with Childress or his third year with Gibbs now, of not getting the job done. Last year, he silenced the critics at Kansas and then really silenced them at Phoenix, you know, the last race obviously was 9 weeks ago, but by passing Kyle Busch to win the Xfinity race at Phoenix. So I got Brandon Jones winning. I think he's more mature than he's ever been, you know, obviously getting older, but I think he's more mature of a race car driver, and he has the experience now that he can really take to these drivers, and I think he's becoming a leader at Joe Gibbs Racing, at least on the Xfinity front. So I got Brandon Jones. And Neff, since we're not recording...
Nice call.
Yeah, since we're not recording until next Thursday, we got another cup race to decide to predict here. I'm not going to go on a limb, I would say. I mean, it is kind of a limb because he gets 1 to 2 wins, you know, every year. I'm going to go Kurt Busch. He's gotten off to a so-so start this year. He's been fast at some racetracks. He was really good at Darlington last year. I'm going to say Kurt Busch gets his one and maybe only win of the year. But he could rattle off 2, 3, 4. Who knows? Kurt's that type of driver where if he gets in his zone like he did last year, granted he only won one race, but he was a top five driver until the playoffs started. Then it all kind of went to hell.
I'm going with Brad Keselowski. I think Keselowski and Harvick are going to duel it out for the win on Sunday, and Keselowski's going to come back and win the one on Wednesday.
Would not be surprising, as Penske's been really good this year. We got to remember Ryan Blaney hasn't won a race, but really, you know, got off to a really good start this season. He's led a ton of laps. Could have won Daytona. Could have won Vegas. Could have won Fontana. Was probably the second best car at Fontana before he had a loose wheel with what, 2 to go. So yeah, Team Penske looks to be probably the best team so far this season at the cup level, but we've seen this before. They get off to hot starts like last year, and then ultimately as the season goes on, they got seemingly, probably maybe not worse, other team just got better. But Neff, you kind of hinted at it. We got Rick Ware coming up on the podcast. This is a pretty good interview, long interview too, 28 minutes or so. So Neff, you know, Rick Ware Racing, obviously, you know, they were definitely affected by the pandemic, as all small teams were, as all teams were. But this team is, you know, they've got a fourth car now. They purchased the 15, it looks like, per Racing Reference, if you look at the entry list. There was talk about that for sure, you know, before this pandemic. But it looks like, you know, it's hard to say they're turning the corner, but it looks like, you know, they're at least, the results this year, if you look at it, have definitely been better than in previous years.
You got to start somewhere, and everybody starts at the back, works their way forward, and it's a solid group of people over there. It's a bunch of racers, and it's not that group just because they do it the old-fashioned way. It's not flashy. It's just nose to the grindstone getting it done, and it's kind of cool that Rick is continuing to acquire teams and continuing to keep the back half of the field alive, you know? So we're not seeing teams folding up and leaving. We're just seeing them get purchased and moved. So I like to see them have some success. It'd be great to see them catch lightning in a bottle one of these weekends and run a couple top tens or something. But they, it's a good group of people. Rick's a super nice guy, and I'm glad to see him continuing to expand his presence in the sport.
Yeah, for sure. He goes in depth about how this pandemic really affected the team and what they've done in the 9 weeks since the last race. I like the interview a lot. So I want you guys to hear it. Let's get to my conversation with Rick Ware. All right, Rick, we've had almost 9 weeks since the last NASCAR race. I'm curious, what have you been up to over the past 2 months?
Well, we've been trying to follow through with some plans we started working on at the end of last year, into the beginning of the season, with sponsors, and kind of gearing up to, expand the program some. And, we've put together acquiring some new race entities and cars and programs to, expand our racing into Mooresville and such. And so it's been a real, two steps forward, three steps back kind of thing, like everybody's having to deal with right now. We were all showed up at Atlanta ready to race, and, had all the expenses and people and fresh cars and motors from the West Coast Swing, and then, we stopped, and everything just, was you know, dead in the water for so long, and without really knowing when and what we were going to do. And of course, we've, you know, had a little bit of a step up to, we thought we were going racing sooner, then it backed off. And so it's been tough, you know, because our business relies on so many people, so many behind the scenes things. But, you know, we're all healthy. All it takes is just to get on the television for a little bit and realize this. I bet you think you have it. In reality, you know, we're very fortunate because there are people that are in worse situations, business-wise and health-wise. And so it's, you know, it's a reality check. You know, we're thankful the Lord has blessed us to keep us healthy and, you know, to be able to stay in business.
For sure. That's a good perspective. I saw also the team moved shop, right? How much of a process has that been?
Man, it's been huge. I'm kind of a creature of habit. I hate to move, but we've been in our existing shop in Thomasville for 16 years. Been in the same house for 20 years. And so, you know, we just, you know, I've been looking at just a bunch of shops all around Mooresville, Cornelius area, and just, you know, nothing really quite worked out the last year or so. It just, we couldn't afford to get the places we wanted to be in, and I didn't want to make a backwards move. But the bulk of our people, you know, as we've grown in the Cup scenario, it's, you know, become a 7-day-a-week deal. And, you know, the more and more people just had a farther and farther drive. So when we got to Mooresville, it, I'm going to say 95% of the people, you know, live within 5 or 10 miles of the shop. So they're ecstatic. You know, they feel like they've got a weight lifted over them, off of them. And, you know, a lot of them can go home during lunch, and, you know, they're saving hundreds of hours a month in travel time. So I'm happy for them. And us personally, if, you know, we've been looking to try to find just a place to rent because we still have our house in you know, outside of Greensboro and Jamestown. And so, you know, it's been a, you know, between all that, the personal stuff, the racing stuff, it's a huge amount of stuff to deal with.
Was the plan to move ASAP, or was this hiatus actually good for that because you had time to move?
Well, so the byproduct of this, it gave us time to do it. You know, we had to kind of do it, you know, just a couple people a little at a time because, you know, we had to make some cutbacks, and then we weren't allowed to have any people go out and about. Mm-hmm. So we've had to have just a handful of specialty units of people, you know, going back and forth. And, you know, me and my wife, you know, loaded up, you know, her SUV with, you know, clothes and all kinds of stuff from the housing, you know, portion. And then from the shop portion, we've kind of just slowly brought little pieces. Then in the last, you know, I'm going to say 3 or 4 weeks, we've had to finally get a little bit more realistic and aggressive, getting more cars over. And, you know, one of the teams came straight to Mooresville from Phoenix. So we were kind of sort of there, but it was, you know, it still wasn't organized. It was just like a clump of cars and parts and toolboxes. And you know, we tried to be organized. And so it was kind of frustrating. But, you know, now that, you know, when they've lifted the they just reorganized, I guess, the priority from, you know, the personal distancing, et cetera. So it allowed us to get a couple people back. And unfortunately, we didn't get the PPP funding for employees and things like that. So we had to kind of be careful. But it's we've got it done. It's you know, we probably have maybe 10% of some of the stuff back at the Thomasville shop, and we're keeping that shop right now, and our road race stuff is there. We're going to keep that based out of there. But, you know, that, you know, I think all other racing other than NASCAR and Cup is really on hiatus, and not quite sure even when and if, and those, we're going to be doing any of that. So right now all the focus is on the primary program, which is the Cup program anyway.
Right. Now, like I mentioned, we haven't been at the track in 2 months. So I guess from all aspects, how does that kind of affect your team, Rick Ware Racing?
Well, you know, financially, it's been just an extreme hardship on everybody at every level. If you're a single car team or a multi-car team, or, you know, a multi-car conglomerate. You know, it's, I think, equivalent across the board has affected all of us. Obviously, you know, the mega teams have more dollars that have already come in, but they also have more expenses. And, you know, we kind of, you know, fill in the middle there. So it's been tough because the racer and business portion of you, when you sit idle, typically racers, you know, like you, if you're in a long week and you get on the internet, and I'm looking at Top Fuel cars and sprint cars. You know, your mind is always going, and then it comes back to, man, we got so much work we got to do, but we don't know where we're going. We're going to Miami, and now we're going to Martinsville. Well, no, now we're going to, you know, Darlington. So you kind of want to, you know, when we're going to Martinsville, we were going to have to build up some short track cars because we took, you know, five cars all fresh, ready to go to Atlanta with fresh motors and, you know, everything for a mile and a half stuff. And then it's like, well, we might be going to Martinsville. And it's like, okay, well, do we need to build up? And, you know, because the short track packages and spindles and brakes is a whole other animal. And then that got pushed back. So it's been a lot of starting and stopping, but your mind is really gets wore out, I guess, for me.
Sure. Now, I know you said on SiriusXM a couple weeks ago that the team was probably going to lose anywhere from $600,000 to $800,000 with the sponsorship. Once racing gets back underway this weekend at Darlington, how does the team make it up? Or does it have to be performance? Because what can sponsors do now activation-wise?
Well, so that's the tough part. And I will say that, you know, we're blessed in that we've had you know, since then, we've had a portion of the sponsors that have been willing to work with us and kind of realign their payment structures. Because, you know, the people that originally wanted to go to Darlington, you know, that was September, right? And it was a throwback. So now, I mean, the way it's planned, I think we're still going to do that throwback in September. But now, you know, this weekend, I think, I don't even remember where we were supposed to be, you know, the Darlington weekend, the original schedule, but it was at Darlington. So they've been really great working with us, better than we thought. Some of the people just they're having financial issues, and, you know, our thoughts and prayers are with them, and we totally understand. You know, it's a weird byproduct. There are some companies that are really doing well because of what they do, and so they're just cautious, but I hope is that we get half of that back, and I think if we get things pulled off the way we are, and NASCAR can go through all this just huge logistical nightmare of making these races happen without spectators, that the numbers potentially could be very staggering television wise, and so I'm hoping that plays into the fact that people can't be there, and what we're going to try to do is really up our social media game for our sponsors to where we can get them videoettes from either the track, the shop, that they can use on their website and their social media, so they can still justify the expenditure. If you're at the level of, you know, a Hendrix or somebody like that, that, you know, bring in a ton of people, and the sponsorship dollars are dramatically higher. You know, they've got a set of problems that we probably don't have to worry about. You know, our income sponsors are, you know, substantially less, and we have substantially less people we have to deal with. So our problem is a little bit easier to solve than their problem is, you know, because a lot of it is geared towards, you know, you've seen, you know, 3M brings in, you know, hundreds of people and do tours, and then they put them in suites and things like that. So I'm not sure how they're going to solve those issues, because we don't really know when the fans are going to be able to come back. And so we don't even have those answers. They're just guesses right now.
For sure. Now, there is a projected at least startup schedule, obviously, at Darlington and then Charlotte the following weekend. If NASCAR, and it looks like they're definitely going to try to get all 36 Cup races in, if they do, would the loss still be that, like, very substantial in terms of money?
If they can get all 36 in, well, we will, one way or another, we will, I think the industry as a whole will survive, because I think everybody's You know, payment structures and income structures are based more so on the races than they are just like, you know, monthly payments, et cetera. Even if they're set up for that, everything's tied to, you know, the 800-pound gorilla of the Cup Series is, you know, we have the longest schedule, we have the most races, and that's what we've sold and hammered to all of, you know, all of the sponsors and all the related people. So if we get that in, which there's no reason that we can't, because I believe we're the hardest working industry in sports, we're willing to run, you know, Sunday, Wednesday, Saturday, Sunday, whatever we have to do, we'll do. We'll do it all the way up till probably, you know, the Friday night before Christmas or something, right? So we can get it in, you know, as long as there isn't, you know, obviously some, you know, just major, you know, relaunching of this pandemic, for lack of a better word, that, you know, we lose control of. So I think NASCAR is going to make it happen. We should be able to get back at our level. I will work really hard to bring in new sponsors to get us back to whatever we lost. I truly believe we can if we have those 36 races. So, you know, but I really got to commend NASCAR in that, you know, it is so hard to reschedule this stuff. It's one thing to get the televisions to move and manipulate. You know, it's another to have the sign off, you know, on the companies that, you know, paid for the commercials. You know, they didn't necessarily pay for the commercials for this particular race. So I think as a whole, it's just, you know, they have a huge deal to solve. And the fact that they've been able to do what they've done, I think, is a testament to how bad everybody in this deal wants to get back. And so, you know, I think as an industry, we're all willing to do whatever it takes to support them, you know, for our sponsors and our employees.
And you mentioned that if we were to have gone to Martinsville, because that was originally the first projected race back, that you'd have had to, you know, build, turn around a short track car. So we're going to four consecutive, essentially intermediate tracks to start the schedule back up. How does that set up for the team?
Man, that's a huge, huge help. And I'll tell you why. If you look at what the normal schedule was, we were going to go to we were going to Atlanta, and then I think in between there at the Bristol or something. But I think really we had Atlanta, we had like, I think a Texas, Chicago, Kansas, I think, right? The first handful of stuff. So we were already loaded up and committed and had either paid for or sitting a bunch of mile and a half stuff. So technically, you know, we were at Atlanta with cars set up for a mile and a half scenario. So Darlington's not a mile and a half, but it's a very similar kind of scenario. It's the same cars. Obviously, we're changing the setup a little bit. But to go to there, to go to Charlotte, you know, and to do four races within that same kind of car really is helpful. So now it looks like we may be going to Bristol and possibly Martinsville. So there's time for us now to prepare for that. And I think NASCAR is taking that into consideration with all the races that we have to drive to, because if we can't fly predictably, you know, it's one thing, you know, because the team and the NASCAR, they're trying to give us an answer, you know, 4, 6, 8, 10 weeks out.
Right.
So to know for sure that we don't have to count on flying, and that includes the, you know, the television people as well. So it's able for us to say, okay, we know worst case, even if you switched up, you know, Bristol for Martinsville for Bristol, or even Richmond or Dover or, you know, Kentucky's 8 hours, any of those scenarios, we know that we can leave at a certain time and still get there. And so I think that's kind of what they're shooting for right now. Obviously, the short, you know, to do a Sunday, Wednesday at a Martinsville obviously is really tough, because you can stay out of trouble and still need a nose and tail, as opposed to, you know, Darlington is a pretty tough animal too, but you have a better fighting chance to get to two Darlingtons and a Charlotte's, especially when, you know, Charlotte literally is, you know, 30 minutes down the road to fix and repair stuff.
Sure. Now, your team is obviously one of the smaller ones in the garage, so kind of a follow-up question. At least at the beginning, there's going to be, it seems like, a lot of short turnaround time. So, you know, say by happenstance, one of the cars gets in an accident, that could bring for a challenging time for the crew, right?
It's absolutely going to. And the reality is, you know, you can flat side a car at Darlington And like if you did that at Charlotte, you'd consider that, you know, a mishap. At Darlington, it's almost a given, right?
Right.
So we're preparing of like, okay, how quick can we either replace a side? If it's too much trouble, can we have another car? So we're trying our Charlotte cars. We're even though we're small, we're setting aside different cars for Charlotte than Darlington. So if we can just get through the first one, which is the toughest, it's the 500 miles. Then the second one, I think, is only what, 300 miles.
300,
or something.
Yep.
If we can get through it, we're going to be okay. And if something happens, then we have something totally else. But even a small team, I think, has to be prepared to where, you know, you maybe have to be cutting off a side and getting to, to go through the Hawkeye and everything. It's really a tough scenario. And we got guys, you know, fortunately, everybody's had a pretty good rest. All our guys are healthy.
Mm-hmm.
They know that, you know, we got a lot of coffee pots here. Yeah, a lot of Monster Energy. So, you know, we may have to be working some late nights. I mean, heck, the race doesn't start until 7:30 at Darlington, and we're going to get back at, what, 2 or 3 or 4 in the morning, and we got to be back there Wednesday to race again. So we're small, but we're loaded prepared to be able to prepare to do whatever. And one of our biggest hurdles as a small team, it now takes more time to rewrap a car than it does to change a whole motor, transmission, and gear. So, you know, we're trying to we haven't got all of our sponsors sold yet, and a lot of them are different even between Darlington and Charlotte and back and forth. So we're trying to pre-wrap a car for Charlotte, but if we had to use it, we're in trouble because we got to put a wrap on, and, you know, a wrapping with a handful of people takes 4 to 6 hours, and heck, we can change a motor, transmission, and gear and setup in that time frame. So the actual graphic portion becomes a problem because you're not gonna be able to make a call on a Tuesday and say, hey, we got to get something printed and wrapped by Tuesday night and head out to Darlington. So those are all the things that we spent so much time just in that pre-planning process versus the physical, you know, mechanical labor of all of these things. Because we actually have our transmissions and motors set aside. Again, it's that variable. Are they going in the same car or are they going in a different car? If it's a different car, what are we going to do about a wrap? You know, so.
Got a couple more for you, Rick, winding down here.
Sure.
How many chassis are ready to go at the shop? Do you know?
Right now at our shop combined, we probably have, I'm going to say we probably have 10 cars with motors in them. We have probably another, I'm going to say 8 without motors, because now, two things. One is we're not allowed to have motors in back of cars. And with the scenario, we're now not even having to bring a backup car because we're literally unloading a car. We're not even doing anything other than jacking it up to put tires to get through tech. Once we get through tech, it's going straight to the grid. So we're not even preparing a backup car because if we wreck in the race, it's over. So it's a little bit – some of the problems that are new that we're having to address, some of those are – there are issues that we don't really have to solve, in the backup sense. So we were pretty prepared in the off season, getting through to the West Coast. Unfortunately, we had no wrecks of any sort for all of our cars through the whole West Coast swing. That was dramatic in that we, I think we had a little bit of, just, you know, some side, you know, damage at Fontana, the last, you know, speedway race. So it was a totally different car for Phoenix. So but that car got fixed right away. And so we're in pretty decent shape just because we were fortunate to get through the West Coast. So and since then, you know, just some ramp up. We did some commission and some body work. They had some outside sources do some body work for us since we couldn't be in-house ourselves. So we actually prepared another car because, you know, some of the Chevys, we were running Chevys and Fords, so we actually had chassis that didn't have things that we were, you know, putting new Ford bodies on. So we actually have a couple of Fords that have brand-new bodies and kind of ready to go. So we were pretty prepared for 2020.
Now, you brought up the no qualifying and no practice aspect. Does that hurt a team like yours more, or does maybe it not even it out, but make it better?
Well, right now, it's gonna help on the depth, you know, to bring a minimal amount of people and to have to, you know, racers are racers. If there's an hour's worth of track time, you want to go out and you set up and you do those things. To have all of that time and effort and wear and tear and then have to race again in 30 hours and be on the track again, that's been asking a whole lot. Mm-hmm. So it does help us in that we know that, you know, if we had a problem in practice or cut a tire down, man, we got to get another car ready. So it solves a lot of problems. It replaces those problems with the problem of the schedule that we have is pretty insane by even NASCAR standards. And for the rest of the motorsports world, it's not even – people don't even understand how you can even run that many races, right? So it's offset by that a little bit. But it definitely helps because, again, if you think about it literally, you know, we're planning on the equipment and the people, and it seems like a really big issue until you realize that you're having to just accept the fact that, man, we're literally unloading a car and going straight to tech and then to the starting line. And when you remove all of those pieces, you don't need your shop guys, and you don't need your engineers and S&T and all of this stuff that you do and taking pictures of where the valves is for practice. All that's gone. I mean, literally, you unload, bolt tires on, go through tech, and when you, and again, we were just dealing with this yesterday in meetings, going, well, then we don't need this, we don't need that. We really, really only have to bring those four people anyway. They can stay back in the shop and prepare. So, in lieu of how crazy this is, it really is the best call. And at the end of the day, at this level, you know, we've had to do this before. We've had rainouts and stuff, and we've gone and done 400 and 500 mile races, and people finish unless they wreck out. So, you know, we're capable of doing that. And at the end of the day, whether it's Penske or Joe Gibbs, you know, those teams are still going to shine. They're still going to be running up front. And if you let them all go practice, they're all going to get better and faster together. And if they can't practice, they're still going to manipulate and adjust during pit stops, and the cream is always going to rise to the top. And so, you know, we may be slightly better than the people we're racing against right around us if we're prepared a little bit better. Fortunately, we got drivers, for the most part, that have a lot of experience at some of these tracks. I would hate it if I had someone never been to Darlington again, they're going to go straight from a green flag. That would be a problem. But fortunately, everybody's been to Darlington, so some of them several times. So that helps us. So I'm hoping that for, you know, the small team mentality, we're prepared a little bit better than maybe our peers. But you know, at this level, everybody's pretty prepared. I mean, this isn't you know, this is a pretty substantial, you know, series that we're in.
For sure. Now I'll get you out of here on this one, Rick. From the competition standpoint, I know we've only had four races. Like I said, not any in 2 months. David Ragan scored a top five in alliance with Front Row in the Daytona 500. Both J.J. Ealy and Joey Gase have had pretty solid runs this year. How would you gauge a season so far on the competition side?
Man, we're ecstatic. Obviously, you know, everybody knows the super speedways are the places where a small team can shine. And we've, you know, we've had... It you know, this Daytona in the last 3 years, some 13s and 16s and 12s. And so, you know, we've signed, obviously, with the alliance. Anytime we have the funding to be able to have a killer program, and then you go put in someone like David Ragan that just knows how to do it. You know, we kind of hedged ourselves to that success, and that's great that we can do that. But now going forward, you know, Joey Gase at Phoenix, I think was only down two laps and I think finished, 29th or 30th. With the green and white checker, JJ was on the lead lap running, I think, in the low 20s, and he was very conservative. The guys were going crazy, and I think we ended up losing some spots. But for a small team, to finish on the lead lap is a huge, huge success. So if you're on the outside looking in, it's easy to go, man, 26th, 7th, or 8th, you know, that's not that big a deal. Well, if you know the business, you know, Michael McDowell, JJ, I think Bubba, and Eric Jones, Now, maybe they're having bad days, or maybe they were, I don't know. But the fact is I remember all four of those cars for 40 laps killing each other to get the lucky dog to get back on. And, again, for a small team to even be with those people, that's, you know, that's a success. That's a huge success for us. And so I'm happy that we had respectable finishes at Vegas and Fontana, and in Phoenix. So, again, you have to be realistic into where you fit in into this world. And, you know, 23rd to 27th, those are successes for us. And then sometimes, you can get lucky and play the odds and have the right speedway race. So I'm happy because before, it was all we could do to race. And, we're 6, 7, and 8 laps down. And, Joey doesn't have as much experience as JJ, but that was Joey's, best finish. Not count speedways, from the standpoint of being competitive. I mean, he was racing hard with a bunch of people, and JJ, I was excited to be on the lead lap, because if you're on the lead lap, in theory, you're still on the hunt. Anything can happen, right? So,
yeah.
it was exciting for me, and again, you have to pick and choose your battles, but I was happy. Our sponsors were ecstatic. For us, everybody has been really, really happy.
That's good to hear, Rick. Appreciate your time. I hope to see you soon. I'm not sure when it'll be, but stay safe and good luck next weekend in Darlington.
Thank you so much for reaching out. I appreciate your patience just to get us together through all this, and big fans of yours. And again, thank you. Thank you for even taking the time to get hold of us.
All right, y'all. There you have it. Fun conversation there with Rick. Again, this was recorded last Thursday, May 7th, prior to anything coming out about his relationship with Premium Motorsports, as it looks like he's taken over the numbers 15 and 27 charters. I'd love to get his take on that. Maybe we can hear in the near future. Fun talking to Neff, too, about North Wilkesboro, and also the dates being lost on the Cup schedule this year. It always sucks to see a track lose its dates, and, truly, I've never been to Sonoma or Chicago, but it's a real bummer if it is the case that Chicago's gone from the schedule entirely moving forward. But before we sign off, if you're listening to me right now and you've stuck with us for the past hour, 15 minutes plus, head on over to manscaped.com and use code FRIENDSTRETCH at checkout for 20% off and free shipping. As the package I got in the mail today says, your balls will thank you. Now we'll be back next week and we'll be able to talk about real racing. Finally, some real racing. And I am pumped about that. I cannot wait to talk to you guys about it. So until next week's show, we out.